Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Pod bless everybody. I'm your host of OPP, Corey Cambridge. And before we get started with this amazing episode, I want to tell you about my other show, Silent Giants. Silent Giants is a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. Ever wondered who made the MTV logo? Did you know the person who wrote Earth, Wind & Fire's hit song September also wrote the theme song for the hit 90s TV show Friends? On Silent Giants, we learn more about these amazing people and dig deep to learn more about their most famous works. Be sure to check out Silent Giants on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Now, let me introduce you to our special guest of OPP.
I'm Dallas Taylor, host of 20,000 Hertz, and this is OPP.
Pod bless everybody, and welcome to another episode of OPP. Other People's Podcast is America's number one podcast discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Dallas Taylor, host of the amazing podcast 20,000 Hertz, a podcast that tells the stories behind the world's most recognizable and interesting sounds. I got in a chat with Dallas about fatherhood. We chat about entrepreneurship, his sound design company, De Facto Sound. We get his podcaster's picks. And of course, we talk about his dope show, 20,000 Hertz. So, on to my interview with Dallas Taylor. Okay, yo, Dallas, what's up, man?
What's up? It's good to meet you.
I know. It's a pleasure meeting you as well. I know before we hit the record button, you were telling me that you are the father of three beautiful girls, man. You just had your newest newborn. How's that feeling?
Yep. I am severely outnumbered, but that's okay because they spoil me rotten and it's amazing and it's the greatest thing that's ever happened in my entire life.
You got no male competition.
None. they just dote all over me and it's amazing. They're just they're all so sweet and we're just best friends and hang out all the time. And it's such a blast.
How old is your oldest?
She's 6 and a half. So we get to do lots of fun stuff together. And then I've got a 3 and a half and then now a 1 month old.
I love the beautiful, even distribution.
Yeah. The 3 year thing is a really nice balance. It's like kind of, it's not too close. It's not too far away. They're still good friends, but they still fight as sisters do. But it's a lot of fun. They're so sweet, and I'm having a blast.
You know, Dallas, I'm not a parent. I have no children. But what has fatherhood taught you?
Ooh, you know, it's I think it's taught me that a lot of humility, and that I was super career focused for a really long time, and then once I had kids, I just realized. I mean, careers are important and all that stuff, but it's just like nothing compared to family and children and, you know, the people that you love and your friends and relationships. It's easy to let all that stuff slide in lieu of just being hyper-focused on a career for a really long time. But there's really nothing to be... I mean, you can have a great career and have great experiences. Another thing that it's taught me is to live in the moment a lot more. I've had tons of anxiety over worrying about the future and then worrying about the past and all that stuff. But like with kids, they just live like right now. They don't care what my career is. They don't care what their mom does. It's just here we are right now and spending time together. So it slowed me down in the moment and to realize that like really the only real thing is right now. We can plan for the future, but you know, it's good to live in the moment to the best of your ability.
What was that career path for you that you were focused on?
So I've been a sound designer for nearly 20 years now. Going into that, I was planning on being like a band director. I was a trumpet player for most of my childhood, and in my kind of in the middle of school when I was performing, I had a really nasty bout of performance anxiety with playing the trumpet, where I'd kind of like freeze up. And I was at the top of all of my all of the ensembles, and I was first chair and all that stuff. But then performance anxiety kind of squashed my whole trumpet playing career about halfway through school. But I was always really techie and wanted to kind of craft sounds in a way that once you crafted them, they stay crafted. My best performance was always going to be in a practice room. And I wanted to do something where, like, when I made it, it stayed made. And so went into the kind of teetered into music recording, didn't like it at all, and very quickly jumped over to television and commercials doing sound design. I did that for a while at a bunch of big TV networks. I worked at NBC and Fox and G4, an old video game network, all in LA, before going to the East Coast and working for the Discovery Channel as a senior sound designer. Before starting my own business, which is DeFacto Sound. And then now DeFacto Sound, 10 years ago when I started it, does trailers and ads and stuff for like Nike and HBO and giant shows and stuff like that. And so that's kind of the bread and butter. But then 3.5 years ago started a podcast called 20,000 Hertz, which one thing led to another. And now we're talking.
Let's go back a little bit to like the element of your career where you were talking about doing music recording. What about that kind of turned you off and made you want to pivot?
I don't want to make giant generalities, but I'll make a giant like general statement about that world. It felt like, I don't know, it just felt like everyone was performing for each other in the room. The persona of music, it kind of went across all of life. And I don't know, it was just a really negative experience. It was, I know that music is very human. It's very, especially creating music, it's very human. It could be very, really emotional. But I think I was just more analytical and, creative, but analytical and stuff. And I just really loved like really professional environments where a lot of really smart people are coming together to stretch the limit of what can be done. Not to say that people in music don't do that, but at least early on, it was just a negative experience. I didn't like the process of it. I love the tech. I love the creativity. I love music. I love creating music. But I didn't like the process generally of that world. And as soon as I found the sound design world and all of that stuff, it was just like, this is obviously where I need to be. It's still just as creative in a lot of ways. And it's almost like scientific. It's like where science meets creativity. And it was always the place that I was most interested in.
How did you first discover sound design?
I found out really about it in recording school. I don't remember what it was specifically, but I remember within a week of planning on doing music recording, it was 1 week and I was already wanting to do sound design. I think maybe I kind of got exposed to it and just hyper-focused on it immediately and started doing whatever I could to go down that path. My first job was pointing a TV camera at a newscaster. And it was like a sideways way. I just wanted to get close to an audio board professionally. And I knew that if I, could go to a news station, I could, there's got to be an audio board somewhere within 50 feet of that. And so I pointed a camera and then very quickly the audio person took me under their wing. I very soon after that was starting to kind of like mix news shows. And then that led me to mixing like sports and doing all these things live. But not for music. So it was like this, a lot of preparation, a lot of like signal flow, like really, if you don't know how the engineering works and how it needs to be performed, you can really fall flat. And so I had this whole like live TV background before actually going into post-production, which is where now it's like the heavy crafting where, we may spend a day working on 30 seconds of something just to heighten it as much as we can. I think just finding out that there's so much more to sound than music was the big aha moment for me.
Tell me the journey of you becoming an entrepreneur and starting DeFacto Sound.
So I was working at Discovery, the Discovery Channel, which is a bunch of networks. There's like Discovery Channel, TLC, Animal Planet, Science Channel, and loved working with those networks. But there was a time where I was like, I want to work with like National Geographic, and I want to work with video game companies doing trailers and in like HBO one day. And the only way to really do that was to go independent. I had a great in-house job, but that wasn't going to afford me time to work with all of these other great brands. It was a good, it was a really fantastic, like, retirement type of job, but I just had this creative urge to work in different directions. And I saw that all the best stuff, like the really high level creative from even those networks, were all going out of house. And I could see who was doing that. And I was like, God, I really want to do that stuff. But to do it, I had to take an enormous risk of foregoing a very steady paycheck and benefits to go out and start my own thing. Luckily, I had a couple loyal clients at that point that floated the first year, year or two. And then a couple others joined along after the first year or two that kind of like, oh my goodness, I think I can actually survive. But for the most part, it was like 5 years of pure terror trying to build something that had some sort of something recognizable as stable. And after that, it kind of grew from there. But every year, it's like it kind of De Facto Sound kind of takes another step up and another step up with the type of people that we're working with. And I think that just has to do with how kind of collaborative and creative minded the whole team is. But yeah, every year it's kind of like adding new. Early on, it was like a lot of Discovery Channel clients, a lot of like National Geographic, things like that. And then it kind of expanded into like Adidas commercials and Nike spots and big documentaries that like won Sundance and was in all these different film festivals and stuff. And then it just kind of another step and another step and another step to the point where now we're doing sound design and mixing on Game of Thrones trailers and big giant ad campaigns and stuff. Yeah.
But how was it stepping into the role of being an entrepreneur or being a boss and having employees and having to manage a team? How was that transition?
I have a lot of opinions on that. So there's a lot to unpack here. So stepping into entrepreneurship feels a lot like just going freelancing and with no safety net. And that's just like the way it goes. Having a clear plan and understanding the difference, like there's things that like you have to understand going down that path. Like there's a difference between like a hobby and then there's a different and like a business. So a hobby is something that at the end of the day, like you enjoy doing, but it doesn't like put you in the black. A business, to my mind, is simply a spreadsheet. There's nothing outside of a spreadsheet that's a business, to my mind. Now, the things that feed that spreadsheet are the value things. That's the service that you provide, or it's the thing that you sell. And so all of those things are kind of peripheral to the spreadsheet. Can whatever this service is it valuable enough for this spreadsheet to equal black? And being honest with kind of what costs are your own costs and all that stuff. I guess understanding that early was really important that like it has to make money to be a business. That was the first step. And it's terrifying because everything's so loose and you're only relying on like a couple people and a couple clients to really like get you going. And really your goal is just to make them love you and tell all their friends about your company. And really just perform at just an unreal level, which you can't ever stop. But I would say that like most entrepreneurs that I know follow the same path. Usually it's like a year or two of sheer terror, followed by 3 years of like terror. Okay, it's okay. Terror, it's okay. So like 5 years of just like a lot of risk, but a huge rewards if you can pull it off. Bringing on employees that's kind of another terrifying aspect because you kind of immediately look at the spreadsheet and go, oof, my salary is going down by that much right away by bringing another person in. But it's not that simple. Kind of what you can do to free up your time when you bring in trusted employees can take you to the next level. Like you have to have time to go to the next place. You can't just like work full time or work 60 or 80 hours of your actual job and then expect that you can take yourself to the next place without any more time. There's only so much of that we have. So every time I've ever hired an employee, it always feels like a sacrifice and an investment. It's never a sense of like, oh, I have all this extra money. Now it's time to hire an employee. It's like, no, I cannot get to the things that I know I need to do for this business without hiring somebody, but that's going to be a giant sacrifice and a giant risk.
Dallas, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to do your podcast, 20,000 Hertz.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. Tell me, how did you first hear of podcasting?
Ooh, first hear about it. Let's see, I'm going way back in my mind here. It must have been, I remember when I got really serious about it. It was 99% Invisible, like their first 10 episodes. I was a super early adopter of that show. I know I knew about podcasting before that. I was listening to more like TV show commentary. I remember there's this podcast I was addicted to called The Fringe Podcast. It was great. It was just like week by week, they would just talk about the TV show Fringe, which I was totally into. And I think 99% Invisible came after that. But I think at the same time, like Radiolab was really doing some wild stuff. And it must have been like This American Life Radiolab. And I was just constantly listening to those. And I think I probably heard of 99% Invisible from Radiolab. And then from there, it just blossomed and exploded. So I've been listening, I don't know, 10 to 12 years, I would think.
At what point did you realize that you wanted to start a podcast?
I knew a while ago. Like, as soon as I heard 99% Invisible, the first episode is about sound. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is going to be an entire show immediately, but 99PI is doing it. So, you know, the thought was there from day one of 99PI. But Roman just crushed that format, and I was like, I will just consume this and not worry about it. You know, I don't even think I was thinking I'm going to make a podcast out of this. I just remember going, I want every single story I listen to be about sound. And so, you know, some years went by. 99PI would kind of bounce around between like a sound show and an architecture show. And, you know, they were kind of finding their voice too. Now, like 99PI is like so gelled, so clear. Stories can be all over the place, but it's like such a like, it's such just like a well-oiled machine that started to veer off of the sound stories. And I don't know if it was really with Roman's blessing, but I had known Roman for years. We had just got together maybe it was before his Kickstarter campaign, so maybe like his second year into doing 99PI. We met and just hung out, got to talking and stuff. I still wasn't thinking about doing a podcast, but the whole like thought of 20,000 Hertz was already in my brain. Something is going to be done under that banner. I think I had the website and all those things like 7 or 8 years ago. I thought about being like a YouTube thing, or I didn't know exactly how it was going to come together. I thought maybe it'd be just like funny YouTube videos. I didn't know. So years kind of went by. 99PI really started to go in a direction of visual. With still amazing like nuggets of sound stories, maybe like twice a year or something. All the while, I was just writing down every story I'd love to hear. And it was just like getting to the point where it was like hundreds of stories all in the sound world. And then I was like, God, I really want to do this. I loved the form. I dabbled in it in like college radio and stuff. I felt like I did not have a voice for it at all. But I know that podcasts need people who hate their voices because we need those voices out there in the world. And so I started working on it, just dabbling initially for a year. And I knew that the first two stories, The Voice of Siri and NBC Chimes, were the things I wanted to tackle. So we spent about a year internally kind of like messing around. Can we do this? You know, it's terrible. We hate the show. We'd write it, rewrite it, unpack it, you know, edit it, re-edit it. And yeah, so like one thing kind of led to another, and then it was just like, okay, we're going to do this. And then it was just like 1,000 miles an hour from the moment we put it out. When we put out that first episode, actually, let's see, it was the first episode. I think it was maybe like a couple hundred people listened to it, all friends and stuff. Put out the second episode and a couple hundred people, maybe 50 more people listened to it. At that point, Roman Mars, I met him, I just kind of bumped into him in the middle of a podcast convention, and we were just catching up. Hey, what's going on? Yeah, I put out my show, like, you know, what do you think? And he was like, it's amazing, like it's so perfect. And I was like, I hope you don't think I'm stepping on your toes or what. And he's like, no, not at all, like these are great stories and stuff. And he's like, matter of fact, can I play your NBC Chimes episode on our feed kind of as a little feature? And I was like, yeah, that'd be amazing. So the day our third episode came out, was the same day that he played our second episode on his feed. And then it was just like stats just went like through the roof, because it was just, you know, he has got to have like a million at this point. But it was just like straight up. So like, I don't know, 20,000 plus people like listened to it in like one day. The show is expensive to make, because to produce something to that level takes writers, producers, sound designers, all of which, to the level that we need to produce it, all of which requires money. And so I was just pouring money out of my own savings and all this stuff, and dwindling it down to nothing. After the first 10 episodes, like, I had completely dwindled every dollar I could ever put into it. Thankfully, it was, I think, episode 11 where we had advertisements for the first time. And thankfully, it was at a number, thanks to Roman, that like we could get kind of the Blue Aprons and things like that. But yeah, it was a... every single person who's ever worked on the show from the very beginning, anyone who touches the show outside of me gets paid like fairly for their work. It's just something that's like, I never wanted anybody else to invest in my own passion. And it took a lot of financial sacrifice on top of just my own time and all that stuff to do it.
I would love to ask about like, how did that transition happen for you to be able to get advertisers? What's the first step for an independent podcaster to make that happen?
I think it's just got to have numbers, because it's really hard to get anyone's attention without the numbers. Like the time it takes, because usually like CPMs kind of land, that's CPMs are like cost per thousand when people are buying advertisements. So for 1,000 people that listen to the show, it's, you know, typically advertisers are going to pay $25 to $35, maybe more if you're like, I don't know, This American Life or something. I have no idea what they charge. To get an agency to want to spend the time on it, like they need to spend like a couple thousand dollars an episode, I've noticed, maybe like 1,000 or maybe even 500 or something. So when you have like a certain number where like at the end of the day, the insertion order is only going to be like $200, it's the labor to put that together, like the time it takes the podcaster and the time it takes the agency just to put together those numbers and put together that insertion order kind of already negates the entire thing, like the entire cost. Like everyone's already spent the money just putting together the stuff. So that's why I think in podcasting, you hear a lot of people say, like, if you want like your standard advertisers, most people are looking at that 50,000 listener per episode range. Because if you kind of do the math on that, let's see, 50 times 25 is $1,250, I think. And so then like per episode, you might get that for one ad. And then for us, we try to do two ads to kind of add that up. For the longest time, even now we only break even with all the costs. Like, I don't really make anything. Occasionally I might make a smidgen of something, but the people making the advertising money on my show are all the people I hire. So like the writers and the sound designers and the graphic artists for our website and stuff. I just invest all that right back into the show.
I have a very simple question that I believe I know the answer to, but I feel like for the listeners who aren't sound oriented or knowledgeable about sound, what does 20,000 hertz mean?
So 20,000 hertz. So a hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, is like a unit of sound measurement, like frequency. And so, you know, we can hear really low sounds, blah, and we can hear really high sounds. So that low sound that I just sang was probably like 100 and, I don't know, I'm just going to say 116 hertz. The high sound I did was probably like 45, probably not that high. I don't know. I'm not even going to guess. That's my best guess. But 20,000 hertz is the limit of human hearing. So we can hear when we're children, because we can't as we get older. The limit of human hearing is all the way up to 20,000 hertz. So it's a super high, like pitch noise.
How is having, having DeFacto Sound as your company, but also having 20,000 hertz as your podcast, how's your podcast helped improve your business or your personal brand?
I think you're definitely hitting the nail on the head of things that are beyond advertising. I would say that on a grand scheme of things that I can't even quantify with money, advertising is a portion of the value that comes by doing research and making things and being some sort of communicator on a certain topic. And so there's been a lot of things happen outside of advertising that's been really beneficial. I remember really early on, we got some really giant Nike spots because the creatives at the agency liked the podcast and they're like, oh, they have a sound design studio. Let's work with them. a lot of the clients that we work with already and the collaborators, they listen to the podcast because they just like to hear what we do. So it's solidified a lot of relationships. And I don't know, making something that's kind of beyond just my insider circle. Like if I wanted to do a show to just speak to my little world, I'd do a show like called Producers, and I would just talk to TV producers, to where other TV producers would listen to that, and then that would work. It's not a bad idea because I'd love to hear from more producers, but I don't know. I think that the mission was way higher than that. Like the mission is way global for like grandmothers and kids and everyone to be able to enjoy sound. Nothing. We don't want to do anything on the show that like takes away or puts a barrier up for someone to enjoy sound, whether that be lots of things, cursing, like any, like we don't do that because we want kids to be able to enjoy sound. We want parents to feel okay with like, oh, this podcast is okay. It's clean and all that stuff. Not, you know, there's lots of interviews that we do where we go down very funny rabbit holes that 5-year-olds can't listen to. But I cut that because it's like, it's getting in the way of the mission. And so having that like kind of high level mission brings a lot of opportunities. Like, since, especially over the past year and a half, I get a lot of like public speaking opportunities and in places that are outside of my own, wheelhouse, like, acoustical society stuff and just, kind of linguistics people and things that like I never really knew much about until I started putting things out to the world. But yeah, lots of really cool opportunities and it just stretches my own mind. A lot of it is just like mental stimulation that I don't know, kind of going back to that, that thought of risk and reward and ups and downs, it's given me a lot of opportunities to be uncomfortable in a good way. Like, hey, do you want to talk to like 1,000 people about some random thing? And I'm like, my body says no. My brain says, no, I do not want to do that. But my mouth immediately goes, yes, I'll do that. Because it's like, that's what living's about, like doing stuff that kind of makes you uncomfortable and see what's on the other side of it. So that's been the biggest thing for me is just like, I try not to make the show about me. I definitely feel very confident in my ability to communicate sound, but I don't want to be the star of the show. Like that's the guests and the topic and sound itself. But there have been a lot of opportunities where through that and hosting that people have like been able to bring me on and where I can speak about my own opinions.
So Dallas, we are now at a part of the show called our Podcasters Picks. It's our segment where I ask today's guests to give me 3 podcasts that you love that we should be listening to. And I would love for you to describe the shows to me.
The one that I can't stop listening to is Reply All. It's just so beautifully done.
I love.
And they don't.
I love it.
They don't need any more listeners. They're enormous, and everybody knows about Reply All. But it's just one of those things that, like, I can't not say because I listen to all of them, and it's the only podcast I think I've listened to every second of from the very beginning, and I just can't stop. You know, one thing you asked me about a lot was entrepreneurship. So it seems like that's something that's like near and dear to your heart. And there's a tiny little show that I was on, but it's done by a couple guys who ran creative studios that they just drop these giant bombs of wisdom all the time to the point where I'm actually taking, but behind the scenes, like something I would not communicate publicly, but like I'm taking kind of, for the next 3 months, I'm like doing a course with them directly. And that's this through this company called RevThink. Very much geared toward creative studios. Like, how do you stand out among all of the seas, you know, all the sea of creative studios? They have a podcast called Rev Thinking. Very, very niche, but just incredible. A niche or niche or whatever. I don't know. I learned that one time in a podcast and I never stuck. But Rev Thinking, you know, it's just great information that about just running a creative studio that, that I adore. And I like their mission too. Okay. I have one more. You know what? I'll just go with it. Sum of All Parts. That's the other one. It's just, it's like a very high, it's done out of Australia. Really, really cool show that is, kind of about math and numbers. And we featured one of their, podcasts recently and it was fantastic. Oh, Every Little Thing. It's so good. Mogul, another one that's really good right now. You know what? I'm just going to ignore all this stuff. But anyway, Every Little Thing, Sum of All Parts, Reply All, Rev Thinking, and I think I forgot one, Mogul. Maybe that's it. But there's 5. And then the one that won't be named because I already said it before. So there's a few.
In Dallas, and before we get out of here, why do you podcast?
For me, it's a little bit different than I think a lot of other people. Going back to that, like, I never wanted anything to get in the way of sound. I knew if this was a YouTube, if this was a YouTube channel, which, by the way, we have a YouTube channel. It's De Facto Sound. It's not under the 20,000 Hertz brand. I always said that, like, the two things I'm most passionate about are making podcasts and making really dumb sound-related YouTube videos. We finally did the second part recently, where now we're posting, like, nearly every day, a piece of a video that's just taken completely out of context with sound design. So it's a lot of fun. That's just, if you search De Facto Sound on YouTube, go subscribe to that. But why a podcast, specifically in the sound world, it wasn't necessarily a shoe-in. I see the power of YouTube immensely, but I knew if I did a show about sound, it would all become the same old, same old. It would be, what camera did you use? How are you doing your lighting setup? Like, oh, that's a beautiful shot. And it's like, it takes away from sound. And I knew at a certain point that the only way to communicate sound and how powerful sound is by itself is to do it in a medium that has nothing else that can take the attention away. And so that's why I specifically have 20,000 Hertz as a podcast.
Dallas Taylor, man, thank you so much for being OPP. I really appreciate you. I really appreciate what you contribute to the podcast space. And as a creative who loves music and loves sound, I just respect and love your show. And thank you so much for taking the time to be on OPP.
Well, thank you so much. And this was so much fun to be here.
Thank you all so much for checking out the latest episode of OPP, and to our special guest, Dallas Taylor. Be sure to check out 20,000 Hertz on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. This episode was mixed by Bradley Naiman. Music for this episode was produced by Richie Quake. And are you down with OPP? If so, be sure to leave us a 5-star review in the Apple app and let me know your favorite podcast in the review section. Lastly, before we get out of here, check out my other show, Silent Giants. Silent Giants highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture, and you can find that as well on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Pod bless y'all. Till next time.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.